Hi everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Hello everyone, and welcome back to Pixels, a show where we discuss the news in the video games industry and try to get behind the news to look at what's happening in the back of the office. My name is Patrick Beja, and I am joined by James Bartolomeu again after it's been like 3 months since I've talked to you, James. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, thank you. How are you?
I'm in the middle of lots of boxes because I'm moving in a week.
Oh, wow.
So, some of you might have heard on on other shows that I'm moving to Finland, and that's happening in a week. So it's kind of an interesting time to be doing podcasts, but it's also not the biggest amount of news in the video game industry. It's kind of the early year lull, but we have a few things to report on. And so you're also you've had a lot of changes in your life. You're working for Green Man Gaming, is it?
Yeah, I'm working for Green Man Gaming in London now as a customer service representative.
So your first steps in the gaming industry.
Yeah, officially. Yeah, definitely.
Well, in the gaming industry, like besides your activity before of YouTuber, streamer and all of that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Obviously you don't speak for them, but no, I just wanted to mention that that's why you've been super busy. Mm-hmm. Let's just jump right into the news. And I think one of the most surprising pieces of news that I've heard in the past couple of weeks was the fact that the most sold game in 2015 was what do you think it was? Seen the notes.
I knew this. it was Black Ops 3, which sold something like 250 million copies.
Yeah, so that's the entire Call of Duty franchise.
That
would be pretty spectacular for one title. Okay. It's still, I mean, Black Ops 3 is the biggest selling game, sell through, mind you, direct to customers, not just to the stores, in 2015. And it's not that surprising in general that Call of Duty sells well, but it felt like, especially in a year with so many strong showings, Batman and The Witcher and all of those, it felt like Call of Duty might not have been the most sold game. And apparently, it is by a wide margin, according to Activision. So, put whatever stock you want in that statement. I don't think they would quite lie about, what a wide margin is. We don't know. But I think it's not just, they sold 100 more copies than The Witcher, for example.
Yeah.
I don't know. It felt like Call of Duty was getting out of steam, and I don't know that it is, if it's still saying that well. We don't have figures, but still.
I'm not the biggest Call of Duty but Black Ops 2 was the first Call of Duty game I paid for, or I even bought, since this last one I bought was Modern Warfare 1. And Black Ops 3 is awesome.
It's really
a good game. Yeah.
Okay, I sort of stayed away from it just because I didn't really like Advanced Warfare, and I figured, it's always the same, but
I've heard it's Treyarch made World at War, and they made all the Black Ops series, and World at War is, I think, previously the highest selling Call of Duty game, and this one is very similar to that. It's great storyline. The storyline's almost like, I don't know, did you play Soma at all?
No, I didn't, and a lot of people have been telling me that it's an awesome game and that I should play it.
Yeah, so the Black Ops 3 story is very similar to that, and like it's all like cyberpunky, going inside people's minds, and it's all about like hacking people's brains and that kind of thing. It's really trippy and really strange for a Call of Duty story, and it's a lot of fun. Like, I wouldn't recommend you play it if you don't like Call of Duty, because it is a Call of Duty game. But I really enjoyed it, and I can honestly see why this is the one that did much better than Advanced Warfare.
I think, you know, I did love the Call of Duty series, but basically I loved Modern Warfare and Modern Warfare 2. I thought they mm-hmm. were spectacular. But after that, it sort of started repeating itself, and it's kind of like, you know, World of Warcraft expansions. If you don't really like World of Warcraft, then they all seem like they're the same thing, even though, you know, even when one of them is awesome and people are telling you, oh, this one is really great, you should play it for a little bit and try it, you sort of zone out and you tune it out. And I think that's, I've done that for Call of Duty. And I know, you know, I know how it works, because I'm talking about World of Warcraft in that way, and I'm saying, oh, this is awesome, you should play for a little bit, and people are like, maybe, I don't know. And for Call of Duty, I definitely did that. I was like, I saw people and reviews being relatively positive, mm-hmm. but I was like, okay, I've done Call of Duty last year, but, you know, maybe I could pick it up on sale. That could be a good deal, especially if you're telling me that the first, the single player experience is good.
It is, and it's branching as well, so multiple choices, and you can do, one of the weird things that it was like, you can do the last level first if you want to just do that.
Really?
It's odd, yeah, but, and like, there's lots of character customization and loadout customization, and there's skill trees as well. Hmm. It's really gone in a different direction. I think if you want to try Call of Duty again after however long it is since you, this would be the one to play.
All
because
right.
it's and, different.
And does it have the same kind? Did you play Modern Warfare 1 and 2? Or
I either? Did play Modern Warfare 1 and 2, yes.
Okay, so does it also have some hyper spectacular oh shit set pieces that
yes.
make you drop your controller?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it's All very right. good set pieces.
Okay, all right. I'll you know what? I'm convinced between the spectacular performance of the game and your recommendation, I might pick it up at some point on sale. We'll see.
Okay.
The other thing is, I guess we could go over very quickly a bunch of numbers for the PlayStation Network, the best-selling games on the PlayStation Network in the US and in Europe. In Europe, it's again, it's Destiny, The Taken King, which is, it's kind of a, you know, it's artificial because it's really a digital product first, The Taken King, so I don't know if it counts. But then, second one is Call of Duty again, then FIFA, Minecraft, Grand Theft Auto 5. I'm talking about PlayStation 4, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. PlayStation 3, Minecraft is the most sold game on the PSN.
I'm really surprised by that.
Are you?
Just because how many people don't own Minecraft now? I don't understand how it can consistently be the top. I guess actually, if you have kids growing up into that age range,
I think that's it. It's people who enjoy the game and who have kids, and they're thinking, or maybe they're just gamers and they're thinking, what game can I play with my kid? Which is also kind of educational. Well, not educational, but it's going to make their brain work a little bit. And it's a game that anyone can get behind, I think.
Yeah.
It's also the most sold game on Vita as well. There aren't that many games on Vita, so
no.
And pretty similar in the US again. Black Ops is first. Grand Theft Auto, Minecraft, Star Wars Battlefront, PlayStation 4, and etc. etc. So and on PlayStation Vita, Sword Art Online, Hollow Fragment. I've never played Hollow Fragment. I mean, Sword Art Online.
Sword Art Online. Have you seen the anime?
No.
It's pretty good. It's basically, it's about a guy who, in the first episode, someone releases like a VR MMO.
Oh, yeah. I've heard of it. Yeah.
It's cool. I enjoyed it, but I wouldn't play a video game based on it.
Well, that's an excellent recommendation as well. Yeah, so there you go. Figures, it's always interesting. I mean, the most surprising thing definitely was Call of Duty, most sold game.
Yeah.
I guess it puts things into perspective as well. You know, you still have, however much we, like, year-long gamers love games like, you know, The Witcher, Batman, and all of those, you still have the the plebeians that go and buy FIFA and Call of Duty en masse, and they bring those numbers up. So, you wanted to talk about a kind of a controversy about Mortal Kombat, Kombat X on PC.
Yeah, so I think over the, I think it was last week on no, so it was this week on like Tuesday they announced that they're not going to be supporting it anymore. They have said that they're not going to bring the upcoming DLC of Mortal Kombat, Combat Pack 2 to it, and they're also not going to be patching it any longer.
And so, the game is not in a perfect state either.
No. Many players have lost save data. Netcode is poor, and in a fighting game, netcode is pretty important because, you know, obviously every frame that you miss is a frame you'd be losing. Yeah, it's just and it's just another sign of Warner Brothers saying, hey, we, you know, who cares about the PC?
It's kind of, at that point, there are some developers where you're thinking, why do you even bother?
Yeah.
Just don't put it out on PC. I guess it's a cash grab, but it's surprising that with the game not in a perfect state, they would say that they're completely pulling support. Obviously, they don't have to do anything. I don't think there was a, you know, a contract, a legal contract that they were going to bring all of the DLC to the game. But there's a reasonable expectations from players who buy it on the PC that is going to have the same content than it will as it will on consoles. It's I'm you know I've seen this story out of a. Out of the corner of my eye here and there. I'm surprised it's not raising more of a stink. I'm wondering if it isn't PC players finally giving up on all of this bullshit.
It could also be that I'm working CS. I've been getting a couple of tickets for people saying, hey, what are you guys going to do about this? I mean, obviously I can't say what GMG is doing about it, but it could be that I'm just seeing more of it.
Yeah, it's possible. I've definitely seen it mentioned here and there, but it doesn't seem like it's risen to the level of controversy. It's
not
just
yet,
being reported on.
Mm. Yeah.
It's kind of disappointing for sure. On the other hand, I am guessing that if Warner Brothers is kind of daring to confront the angry PC Master Race people, it must mean that the game has sold poorly on PC and that they're focusing their efforts on the console versions because it's a successful game. It's just, the PC is not traditionally a fighting game platform, although Street Fighter V is coming out on PC as well. So
yeah, it's going to have cross-platform play as well.
Yeah. So for that one, they're going to have to maintain it.
Yeah, I think I'm going to be buying Street Fighter V.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be buying Street Fighter V on PS4 though.
But we still play together because it's crossplay.
Woohoo! So just wanted to mention that support thing on Mortal Kombat. It's kind of disappointing, but you know what you're going to do. It hurts the PC, but there isn't one unified. I'm thinking if there is one industry voice for the PC, it would be Valve with Steam, but they haven't said anything about this, and they probably won't, which says to me it's not worth raising a stink. So, we also wanted to mention a few things about upcoming releases. The Division is not coming out hyper soon. It's in March, but there's a beta available on Xbox One in a few days on January 28th. Have you had a chance to play The Division? Or
I haven't. I do have a beta key that came through the other day for the PC beta, which I think the same weekend, actually.
Okay.
It looks interesting. It looks more Destiny. So
That's the prevalent opinion that I've seen here and there, and that I have sort of, you know, assumed as well. It feels like an instanced instanced multiplayer. Go into your dungeon or strike or when you have to play with a couple of friends, or you can do your progression thing as well. What's it definitely feels like Ubisoft is not putting all of the marketing and buzz effort behind this game that we could have thought when it was first announced a couple of years ago, and it looked incredible and it seemed like a huge title. At this stage, it's not making a lot of a lot of noise.
No.
So I'm kind of wondering if it means that the game is less ambitious than they initially had hoped, or if we had, you know, sort of risen our expectations too high, or there's something that doesn't smell quite right with The Division, and I'm worried that what doesn't smell right is the fact that it's not as incredibly good as we hoped it would be initially.
I think, when did they first announce it? In 2009, I think they showed it at E3 or something like that.
That far? No, 2009?
I don't know.
No. The Division was, there was, I mean, I know maybe they announced it before, but there was the trailer in 2014, was it?
Okay, sorry, no, it was 2013.
Okay, 2013.
2009. Right.
But it feels like, you know, maybe that also plays into it. We feel like it's been forever.
Yeah.
And
have you seen any of the trailers at all?
Yeah, I mean, there's a trailer, even there's a live-action short coming to Amazon Prime. I've seen the trailer for that. They're doing some trailers, but the game itself, I've seen a lot of the videos, a lot of the gameplay. Mm-hmm. I've even tried the beta at Paris Games Week a few months ago, and it's very hard to get an opinion on the game itself with just the trailers and just having played for 20 minutes in a demo booth. Mm-hmm. It definitely didn't feel like an incredible experience. Maybe it's going to be a lot better once you get to play it a little bit more. But also the people reporting on it, you know, the people who did play the beta for a longer time, didn't seem to be saying that it was an awesome game. I think it's going to be a more niche game than we thought it would be initially.
Yeah, I could see that. I think I watched a trailer a couple of days ago, and it looked like what they're managing. It looked like they've done, again, just from watching the trailers, but it looks like Destiny did the gunplay and the gameplay really well. Watching the trailers, it looks like they have not done that well, and the story is going to be focused on. I mean, I saw a video of someone just standing there being hit by a flamethrower for like 20 seconds. and it looked so poor. It looked like a WoW boss fight, which you don't really want in a shooter. You want reactive gameplay.
So I think the thing about The Division is that it was sold like an action shooter, like a fast-paced FPS or TPS. I really don't think that's what it is. My experience during the beta was of a very... I've spoken about this a couple of times, but it's a very slow and deliberate strategy TPS. It's not quite, you know, turn by turn, but it's more strategic. You have to decide which item you're going to use when and aim kind of well, but more importantly, you're going to decide where you're positioned, these kinds of things. So they're doing themselves a disservice by not explaining what the game is and by sort of letting it sort of live to the hype that it's going to be this incredible action thing where you're... Again, everything is colored by that initial trailer and gameplay trailer that was so incredible and that seemed very action-oriented, when I don't think that's what the game is even trying to be. So maybe that's where the disconnect is happening as well.
Mm.
So
yeah, I can see that.
So yeah, we'll see. I'm sure we'll have a lot more reports on in January when the beta starts. On the 28th when the beta starts. So I'll keep an eye on it, but it's more of a lazy eye than it used to be maybe a year ago.
Yeah. I mean, I recently bought a PlayStation. I don't know if I told you, I recently bought a PlayStation 4.
Oh, and congratulations. Welcome to the world of console enthusiasts.
Yeah, I like it a lot, but I was excited for The Division to play a Destiny, air quotes, clone.
Mm.
And I've got PS4 to play Destiny. I don't really care about it anymore.
Yeah, that's so you've gotten into Destiny?
Destiny, and I've been playing Destiny, Bloodborne, and then Until Dawn, which was amazing.
Oh, maybe that's also one that I should... but I don't like horror games, so...
How do you feel about, like, B-horror movies?
I'm old enough that I watched many of them in the theater when I was growing up, so I don't know that I need one where I'm given the illusion of choice and that, you know, press the right button at the right time.
I'll say that it's definitely not an illusion of choice.
Okay.
Everything you do definitely affects a story.
All right.
Again, not to digress too much from what we were saying, I think playing Until Dawn with a... I played it with my girlfriend, and it was awesome. Doing the whole, like, making choices together and going through, like, the scares together was really cool. I think it's a lot of fun. Especially as someone not into horror. I thought it was really cool.
Okay. Yeah, but again, maybe. We'll see. I that's the big problem with games today. We have too many of them.
Yes.
We have just too many games.
Yep. It's a sad problem to have.
Yeah. And talking about that, there are more games coming out. I'm just going to go over the ones that are coming out in the next couple of weeks before the next show that I am curious about. The Witness is coming out January 26th, so in just a few days. It's going to be about $40. This is the next game from Jonathan Blow. I've talked about this a couple of times on the show. He's the developer behind Braid, that sort of almost started the indie games revolution. What was it, like 8 years ago? And there's Firewatch, which I'm also very excited about. It was one of my games I was highly anticipating from my list last episode. Mighty Number 9 is a Mega Man clone that was kickstarted. Is it Kenji Inafune?
Yes, that's correct.
I'm more curious than excited, but I want to see what happens. I've seen a few images of, the beta and development, and it looked, we'll see.
I was excited for it, but then I saw some people that played the game in the beta saying it was a lot more about combos than Mega Man was, and that kind of made me a little bit wary of it.
I mean, they have to modernize it a little bit.
Oh, for sure.
But it's the kind of issue. It's like what is it? Bloodstained. Igavania. You want the nostalgia, but also you want it to be adapted to today's fun. Because if you wanted to play the old one, you could just go and play the old one. So it's a very difficult process, and we'll see. I'm curious for sure about Mighty Number 9. And finally, Unravel, which is that... it's the "we are a big company, but we want to do something that feels indie" title. Yes. It definitely looks super cute and genuine. I don't want to imply that it isn't genuine, but it's coming out February 9 as well on PS4, Xbox One, and PC. First, between those four games, The Witness, Firewatch, Mighty Number 9, and Unravel, is there anyone that appeals to you particularly? And second thing, what do you think about Unravel playing the indie card, although there's no reason that they couldn't? But
I'm very excited for The Witness. I think I didn't like Braid, but I'm not really into my puzzle platformers. The Witness looks like I really respect what Jonathan Blow can do with puzzles, and it looks like he's made another Talos Principle.
It looks like the Talos Principle looked like the Witness for people who couldn't wait for The Witness.
Yes.
And a poor man's version of The Witness. We haven't even played The Witness, so we don't know, but that's what it felt like.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, Talos Principle was one of my favorite games of 2014. Was it 15?
Talos Principle? It was 15. It felt like... I'll look it up.
Anyway, one of my favorite puzzle games I've played recently. And if I can get more of that from The Witness, I am very excited for that.
Okay, you're right. It's December 2014.
So right on the cusp then. Yeah. Okay. Unravel, I mean, Ubisoft have done the same thing with Child of Light. I don't think there's anything wrong with playing that card. I think Unravel is the best thing they've shown from that kind of perspective. Like, I think that Cuphead looks poor.
Really?
I know. I don't think it looks. I think the art style is fantastic, but it looks like it's just one big boss rush to me.
Yeah, that's what it feels like for sure.
Yeah. So I mean, I think Unravel looks like a game I'd enjoy more than Cuphead. I think it's fine. I like that they're doing something like that. I like more variety in my games, and you know.
Yeah. Cuphead isn't an EA game, by the way, I don't think.
Oh, sorry. I thought we were talking about Microsoft Xbox games. I didn't realize EA.
Oh, right. Yeah, okay. Yeah, but Unravel is coming out on all the platforms. So.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. It's PS4, Xbox One, and PC.
Blimey, okay.
It's EA Access. So basically, if you have Origin Access, which is the $5 a month subscription for EA games on PC, you can play it as well. I mean, there's like an early, like, 1 hour or 2 hours of gameplay available for quote-unquote free. But
okay.
Yeah. Firewatch is probably the one I'm looking forward to the most. I'm very curious about it. Cautiously optimistic.
I don't know anything about it. Like, I know it's a Gone Home-ish kind of game, isn't it? Or am I wrong?
No, you're right. And we don't really know much about that game. It just, we know that it has a very interesting art style and that it's kind of a, what people sometimes refer to as walking simulator, which is exactly that. You know, Gone Home, Ethan Carter, Dear Esther. It's basically just a storytelling thing that you're walking through. And What I appreciated with the Firewatch trailers was the writing, and I thought it was very clever and very funny in those 2 minutes of trailer that we saw. So the entire game could be crap. We don't know, but it looked interesting. So that is also, I mean, the season is sort of beginning slowly, but already there are a few games that I want to try out. So Firewatch is one of them. Mighty Number 9, The Witness for sure. I don't know if I'm not into puzzles, so I don't know. We'll see. And then after that, you know, Street Fighter 5 and all of those. Oh, I can't believe we're so close to the release of Street Fighter 5 already. It feels like I've hoped for that game to come out forever.
Yeah. I'm really disappointed about the Mortal Kombat. I've been playing a lot of Mortal Kombat X recently, and I've been enjoying it. It's the first, I think last time we spoke, I said I bought it. It's the first fighting game I've really played. I think I will buy Street Fighter V.
You know, I don't want to be disparaging to the Mortal Kombat loving community, but really, Mortal Kombat isn't a real fighting game. I don't want to be mean, but it's kind of like, yeah, you press the buttons, it does stuff on the screen, but if you want to go serious fighting game, you have to go somewhere else. It's
okay.
It's, you know, it's hard to explain, but there is a level of predictability and rigor that, like, almost academic rigor in the way you approach Street Fighter, which isn't present. And it's kind of a little bit, Mortal Kombat is a little bit more, this might work and things explode everywhere. And it's kind of the spectacle. And I'm not saying there isn't spectacle in Street Fighter, but it's more of a, it's very hard to explain. Very, very hard to explain.
Are
without
you saying
being,
that Mortal Kombat X is the League of Legends to Street Fighter V's Dota?
I don't know MOBAs well enough, but it might be an apt comparison, yes.
Okay.
It's kind of like not even Call of Duty to CSGO, but something along those lines.
Okay. You've sold me even more so on Street Fighter V there.
All right. Well, again, something you'll have to report on and let us know how it goes. Bunch of other news. Microsoft has bought Minecraft Education Edition, which I had never heard about before, but it's funny. It's basically just a framework for making Minecraft available in classrooms, and they have purchased the assets from the company that developed it. It's not like it is specifically designed to teach stuff. It's just that kids play Minecraft, and it's just a different way for them to interact with each other and the teacher and sort of it brings concepts of social interaction through better because they're mm-hmm. interested in what they're doing, which is probably valuable, but I don't know if it qualifies as education. But it's really like Minecraft is the gift that keeps on giving. We were talking about it earlier. I wasn't sure what they were doing when they bought it from Mojang, when they bought Mojang a few, what was it, a year ago?
Sounds about right, yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, yes, it keeps selling. It's an incredible success in Japan. Still, it's selling the Vita in Japan on that title alone. It's kind of surprising that it's going that far.
I think this education edition is really cool.
Does it do anything special beyond the fact that it's Minecraft?
I think having access to a tool like that means that a teacher could imagine a teacher sitting down for in like 2 hours. They could make a Victorian British home, right?
Yeah.
And they could leave notes saying in Victorian Britain they did this and that and that. And it gives the kids a way to actually interact with those worlds. I could see this being awesome for history classes and coding classes for like Redstone programming.
Right.
I think, yes, it doesn't do anything new, but it's an easy tool for teachers to use and kids are familiar with it. And, you know.
No, you're right. This is exactly what they're using it for. You can see videos where they have a teacher with a class divided in groups and they have to work together to build something. And you have different groups and he goes from one group to the other and says, oh, all right, so where are you? Okay, don't forget to use this here and this there. And it does, I mean, I understand that it is so much more attractive for a student to be doing something mm-hmm. in Minecraft than to open a book, and maybe it's an entryway into other things. It's awesome. I don't know what exactly how it integrates into the curriculum.
Sure.
But
I think also what's interesting to me is because of how much cheaper Minecraft is, how much it will affect, again, I don't know anything about how schools teach things, but imagine having a tool for $15 as opposed to a tool for $150.
Yeah.
That can hopefully do huge things for school budgets. It's really cool to see video games having that level of impact.
Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting for sure. And I'm looking forward to one day in the far future when I have children and they go to school. I think it would even allow me as a gamer to connect a lot more with their education if they're doing that on Minecraft, you know, 2 or something.
Sure, yeah.
ESPN now, ESPN.com has an esports section. We've been talking about esports a lot in the past few episodes, and it's kind of interesting that ESPN did that mainly because we've heard a couple of pretty vitriolic comments from hosts at the channel saying, oh, over my dead body, basically about esports, which is ridiculous. But it seems they're embracing it. So good on you, ESPN.com.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. I mean, it's where the money is in video games right now for them. And I mean, this is going to be huge for it. I think, especially seeing as you see those disparaging comments, I guess because those hosts are scared. I mean, why else would you make comments saying that's not sports?
Yeah, I think I understand the idea that esports isn't real sports.
Mm-hmm,
I completely understand why people would think that. It's just, it's a different thing, but it doesn't mean it's not. I don't want to argue whether or not esports mm-hmm. is sports, but I understand why those hosts would feel insecure, or not. It's not even about insecurity. It's about they just don't think it's sports, and I understand the reaction. It's just, you know, you are probably part of a world that is going away, and that's fine.
Yeah.
And we also have, by the way, FIFA tournaments being broadcast on FIFA, I mean the game, not the football league, being broadcast on a sports channel in France
too. Oh, really?
Yeah, so it's making its way here as well, so that's interesting. The Witcher 2 is available for free on Xbox One through backwards compatibility with Xbox 360. So if you want to check it out, I mean, The Witcher 2 is definitely not The Witcher 3. It is a much lesser game. It's still a great game, but it's a much lesser game. But still, if you enjoyed the third one and you have an Xbox One, you could go check out The Witcher 2. And that's kind of what I was hoping would happen when they announced the backwards compatibility. They would bring games as part of the Xbox Live Gold. I don't even know if it's part of that. But yeah,
I think it is.
Yeah. Okay. So that's what I was hoping for. And The Witcher 2, you know, it might get a few people to give it a try. Overwatch, the closed beta, is returning not this month, but in February. But it will have a new game mode and new maps to support the game mode. So I have been ridiculously excited about Overwatch.
Yeah.
And were you in the beta?
No, I haven't had a chance to play it yet.
Okay. I'm sorry for you. And for many of the listeners who wish they could have tried it. But yeah, it's returning in February. I'm very excited about a new game mode. This is definitely one of the things that everyone thought was missing from the game, the sort of one or two additional game modes to make it, to round it out and make it a little bit more diverse in gameplay. And they are bringing it for the beta along with the ranked play, or not ranked play, but progression system. So we can wait a couple of more weeks for that. It should be mid-February. So I'm really hoping it is going to come out. So I'm really excited for it to return. There's a bunch of pieces of news about how Japan is weird in here.
Yeah.
It's there was basically a succession of screenshots from certain games. One Piece Burning Blood has bikini costumes. Dead or Alive Extreme 3 owner mode, where you can look at the it's a beach volley game with the female characters from the Dead or Alive fighting game scantily clothed, and you can give them gifts and look at them through different angles, etc., etc. And then there's Laura's new costume in Street Fighter V, which has it's like just go look up the screenshots.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now.
But you know, don't be in the office.
Oh,
because
that's
ridiculous.
It's kind of
it's kind of, you know, it's at that level, all of those three games, it borders on it's not
satire.
Softcore porn, but it's kind of the kind of thing you would see in a you know, Playboy magazine or something like that. So
it's so over the top. I think they're making fun, like, look, at least the Laura costume, it looks like they're making fun of themselves.
It's possible, yeah, but it's kind of silly. And then there's this, but you know, knowing Japan, I don't even think that's the case.
No.
There's also this controversy, which I just want to touch on very quickly. In Fire Emblem Fates, called Fire Emblem If, in Japan, there was a controversy about a character that was supposedly a lesbian that was turned, quote-unquote, cured of her lesbianism and turned into a straight female, which that was because she had like magic powder in her drink and it made her see females as males and males as females. And that was kind of a very controversial topic for that game in the West. And it's been changed in the Western release of the game to not include any mention of magic powder. Basically, she's not being roofied anymore.
Okay.
And I just wanted to mention it because as much of a staunch defender of the, you know, image of women in video games as I am, I think this is one where there's a little bit of a lot of misunderstanding, not of the game, but have you read about the entire thing? It's so let me go over it very, very quickly for the listeners. The way the story is built is that character has quote unquote an issue where she faints. And, you know, she basically becomes super weird when she's close to a female, an attractive female. Mm-hmm. And the way it's written, the way it's done, is not quite that she's, you know, bisexual. She's kind of bisexual, but it's not like she falls in love with the person or mm-hmm. she, it's more almost like a curse or an illness, which sounds terrible. I understand this. Yeah. Like it doesn't sound good, but it's kind of this condition that she has. And then the hero puts that thing in her drink and makes her see males as females, and then the hero is to her a female and sort of helps her to accept the fact that, you know, she can be close to another cute female without fainting. So it's kind of this excuse to get the hero turned into a female and close to her so that there's some kind of girl-on-girl innuendo action. It never happens. It's a very safe-for-children game. And maybe that's why there's all of this insinuating. But so it's kind of this playful, socially awkward thing where you're like, oh, look, I'm a female. Do you think I'm attractive now? Hee-hee-hee. And it's the most... The problem is, it doesn't make sense if you don't know Japan. And the reason why this is happening in that game is because it's happening in the context of Japanese society, which has many, many issues with with women in general. They're, you know, like 50s level there, as exemplified by all of those ridiculous, you know, bikini costumes in other games. And the fact that they have a lot of social awkwardness and social interaction is very difficult. So this is kind of a outlet for things that they don't have in real life. It's anyway. So there is a base problem in Japan, and I think this is very clear when you look at their video games. But I don't think that in this game, in Fire Emblem Fates, I really don't think that what they were doing was trying to show that, you know, this lesbian can be cured of her condition. It was much more, and the problem is, when you look at it on the face of it, it looks weird and bad, but just as weird as bad. And it's just, you don't understand it when you don't know where it comes from, and when you don't exactly understand how it went through in the scenes in the Japanese version of the game. But for this game, it's just weird. That being said, I think Nintendo is doing well to change it, because it just wouldn't fit in the Western world. It just would look weird and offensive. So it's good that they're changing it, but I don't think in this instance there's the outrage is justified, because it's just an excuse to give the hero boobs and get him to talk to the bi girl.
It seems like it was a joke that went just slightly... It came across slightly... It's a contextual joke, isn't it? It's like a joke that I say as an Englishman might sound different to you as a Frenchman. Like that kind of thing.
Yeah, you know? Kind of. It's definitely the kind of thing where you're like... I can't remember who it was. Maybe John Oliver on Last Week Tonight or something like that, who said, Japan, the weird uncle of the world. And it's really what it is. It's like... The weird uncle doesn't necessarily mean anything by it when he's being racist, but he's still being racist. But at the same time, it's not like he hates black people. It's just...
No, there's no malicious intent there.
Yeah. And even... So anyway, I just wanted to mention it so that people understand what this controversy is. I think everything is going normally the way it should be. The game is going to be... And there are, you know, gay and lesbian characters in those games in the Fire Emblem Fates series. So I think it's fine. It's just Japan is so weird, man. It's so strange. Have you ever been there? No.
I've been to Tokyo for a couple of days. Yeah.
Okay. Oh, just a couple of days. How did you manage that?
Sorry?
How did you just stay a couple of days?
I don't remember, honestly. I think we were in Tokyo for 2 days and then we went to Malaysia.
Okay.
It was just a stopover flight.
Oh, right. Okay. It's not the I don't remember as in I was, you know, I had too much drink and I woke up in Tokyo.
No. Okay. Well, that'd be cool. That'd be a cool story, though.
So Japan is weird, but I'm going to be spending a couple of months in Japan in the spring, so I'll report from there again. Mm. I've lived there for a long time, but anyway, so Japan is weird part over. Dragon Quest Heroes 2 is coming out May 27th in Japan. We don't know where it's coming out in the West, but it's going to come out soon, hopefully. I loved the first one. And it's going to be the 30th anniversary of the Dragon Quest series, starting May 27th, and it's going to last for a year. And hopefully, Dragon Quest XI, which is the one everyone's waiting for, the proper RPG that is going to be available on PlayStation 4, 3DS, and Nintendo NX, that hasn't even been announced. We know that game is going to be available there.
Really?
That game should be available before the end of the anniversary year, so before May 27th, 2017, at least in Japan.
Huh. So the NX is coming soon then, maybe?
Yeah, I would be surprised if it didn't come out this year. That's what I keep saying. Nintendo needs to get past the Wii U. Latest, end of fiscal year 2016, which means end of March 2017. That's the latest I can see it. But
what is Dragon Quest Heroes?
It's a game, a Sangoku Muso, a Romance of Three Kingdoms, basically.
Okay.
Do you know?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
There you go. That's what it
Warriors
is.
Dynasty Warriors kind of stuff.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
And it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. And the second episode is going to allow people to play co-op mode, which wasn't available in the first one. So, a couple of quick mentions. Kojima is touring now that he's allowed to leave Japan because he's not beholden to Konami's whims anymore.
Yeah.
He's going in to different studios to sort of recon what he's going to be doing, what tools he's going to be using for his next venture. Star Fox Zero might be pushed to July, but apparently maybe not. We've seen rumblings about that.
Okay.
So there were a few mentions on retailer sites that it was now planned for July, but then others are keeping it to March. So we don't know. We don't know what's happening with the Star Fox Zero. Nothing official though. Oh, it was April 22nd. And finally, Heroes of the Storm, which I've gotten into pretty hardcore, has announced a couple of new heroes. The Wizard from Diablo 3 and the Necromancer from Diablo 2. They're too high skill for me, but now I'm excited anyway because I like the game. So
that's cool to me. I think the Wizard was the character I played most in
Diablo 3. Yeah. Did you play Diablo 2? You were too young.
No, I played a little bit of it. I was a little bit too young. Mm. I enjoyed Diablo 2. What I did play of it, I've gone back. I think I have a CD copy of it somewhere around here, actually.
Ancient technology.
Yeah. But, you know, it's just too old now.
Yeah. I never liked it. I never liked Diablo. So Diablo before Diablo 3. So, yeah, I guess that is about it. Short and sweet. Cool little episode there. I guess that's going to be it for us. Before we part and I go back to making boxes, can you tell the lovely people listening where they can find... Do you still do anything when you're not working?
Yeah.
I mean online. I don't imply
yes.
that you...
Yes. I'm still trying to stream every night at twitch.tv/Yagabos. And I'm still trying to get an indie investigations video up on my YouTube channel, which is Initiative Check, every day.
You do it every day? Jeez,
I try to. It's more like three a week, but
so
I try and
good.
Do one every day. Yeah.
Hey, what's happening in the world of indie games?
Right now, Boy and His Blob just re-released for the PC. It came out on the Wii U a little bit. That's a remake of the NES game. That came out on the 19th. There's not a whole lot. Westport Independent comes out, which you might find interesting. It's a game about censorship. You have a newspaper, and you have to balance between keeping the populace happy and keeping the government happy in how you write this newspaper.
Ah, Westport
Independent? Westport Independent, yeah.
Okay, sounds cool.
apart from that, not a whole lot. The Witness comes out next week.
Yeah.
But apart from that, not much.
Okay. Well, that's already something. A Boy and His Blob and Westport Independent.
Yeah. Westport Independent is really cool.
I'm going to look it up right now.
Kind of in a Papers, Please way.
Right. Yeah, it definitely looks very similar. It's almost like it should be the same developer.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much, James. You will find the link to your Twitter in the show notes. And for me, it's Not Patrick on Twitter and Facebook. And you will find this show and the comments and other shows at frenchspin.com. That's going to be it for us. Back to boxes for me, and talk to you from Finland in a couple of weeks. Bye, everyone.
Bye, guys.